Hi, welcome to Colonial Williamsburg, past and present. The stuff is new and you won't hear it anyplace else. This is Behind the Scenes, where we let you meet the people who work here. That's my job. I'm Lloyd Dobbins, and mostly I ask questions. This time I'm asking Marshall Sheets and Apprentice Cooper. And the first thing you ask is, what is an Apprentice Cooper?
Well, Lloyd, an Apprentice Cooper is basically someone who is learning the trade of coopering, of cooperage, of being a cooper, from a master cooper, someone who's practiced the trade for years, perhaps their entire life, actually. And so I'm a student, and I practice each and every day, well, I guess 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, learning from the master of the trade how to make basically barrels, wooden buckets, wooden barrels, butter churns, tubs, any kind of round, conical, wooden container that's composed of vertical slats that make up the walls of the container, and then they're held together by hoops or bands, which are hammered down onto the container. That's an apprentice cooper. That's what an apprentice cooper is.
Okay, now that you know how to do that, tell me, how do you do it? I mean, how do you make a barrel? They're staves, obviously. How do you keep it from leaking?
How do we keep it from leaking? Yeah. I guess the real key is experience, practice. When I first started off, my first day, I remember very clearly, the master didn't give me a pile of wood and say, here you go, make a bucket. He said, I started off basically doing very simple skills, carving a piece of wood, carving the back of the stave. Really, the key is being able to shape a piece of wood, multiple pieces of wood, to fit so closely together, using a variety of tools, knives, saws, axes, planes, scrapers, routers, any variety of wooden tools to shape a number of pieces of wood to fit so closely together that when you actually hammer the hoops down onto the wide end of the container, the tension will close up those joints close enough or tight enough so that water simply can't leak out. We don't rely on any kind of swelling or gaskets or sealants or anything like that because, quite frankly, they're not that reliable. So we just don't rely on them.
So you just have to, by hand, make it fit.
Yeah. Yeah, by hand, it's actually a very tactile trade, a very visual trade. We're using a lot of senses, actually. We're feeling the joints, making sure there's no imperfections, there's no ridges, making sure they're perfectly flat. We're eyeballing all of the tapers, all of the curvatures, making sure they're the right shape to fit into the hoops. And it's really more of an art than a science. We use very few measuring devices, with the exception of our eyes, our own senses. So, yeah, I do think of it more of an art than a science.
How long have you been at it?
To be honest with you, I've only been doing it for about 3 years, so which is a very short amount of time in the life of any average skilled tradesman of a cooper. The master of the shop, he's been doing it almost his entire life since he was a young boy, I guess around the age of 10, 12, so nearly 30, 40 years, somewhere in there. So quite a long time.
Okay, now, you don't see many ads in the paper for skilled coopers needed. So how did you get interested in this?
My interest, I think, with just about anybody, I think, who is employed at Colonial Williamsburg, at least in the education department, your interest really begins, I think, with history. So that's what really drew me here first and foremost. I went to college, and I received a history degree at college. And during the summers, I was doing this kind of work at museums, doing living history, dressing up at one point as a French priest, another time as a British soldier, another time a French fur trader, another time English tobacco planter. Actually my first job at Colonial Williamsburg was a brick maker. And what really drew me to the trade of coopering, I think, more than anything else was the fact that I was going to be put into a position that I was going to be able to learn the trade from somebody who learned it from a master cooper, and that master learned it from another master cooper, going back all the way through history, as far as the trade has gone. It's been passed down orally, verbally, from master to apprentice for thousands of years, and I'm next in line. And that, I believe, is history in its purest form, and that's what really drew me to the trade of coopering, is my opportunity to learn history this way.
But you must have some sort of wood skills that you were aware of.
No, I had none, actually.
Really?
Yeah, before working at the cooper shop, I had I had virtually no woodworking skills. My skill lied mostly in, I think, oration. That's what I was really trying to hone by working in museums and interpreting to visitors and guests. But then, of course, I was learning brick making. I was doing some tobacco planting, so a little bit of horticulture there. But really my skill lied in the research and the interpretation of the history until I came to the Cooper Shop. And now I've learned that I love woodworking. Mostly focusing on coopering, but other things as well, but mostly with making barrels and buckets and things like that.
Do you talk to visitors?
Yeah, all the time. I would consider it more, maybe 50% or more of my job is to interpret our actions, making a barrel, making a bucket, to the visitor, how we're doing it, well, I guess why we're doing it, how I've learned, and not just about the trade of coopering, but I guess history in the town of Williamsburg in the 18th century as well. So.
Were there coopers? Well, there must have been. You had to have barrels. I was wondering how many cooperage shops were around in the 18th century.
Well, with coopering, trades, I think in colonial Virginia, well, in the colonial period, tradespeople are probably composed around somewhere between 10 to 15% of the population. Mm-hmm. And among those tradesmen, among that percentage, coopers were fairly common. Barrels were used for shipping and transporting virtually every kind of good. Coffee beans, sugar, salt, beer, wine, ale, rum, paint, nails, gunpowder, oranges, cranberries. I mean, everything was shipped in barrels. Mm-hmm. And so you had coopers wherever you had anything that was being produced on a commercial scale, on a large scale, so that it could be exported. The cooper was right there at the brewery making beer barrels. The cooper was right there on the tobacco plantation making tobacco hogsheads. He was at the fishery making fishery casks or fish casks. So there were coopers everywhere. Mostly, you don't see a lot of coopers in Williamsburg, which is I guess, a little ironic. We know that there was one cooper in Williamsburg, but he was making mostly buckets and tubs, not many barrels, mainly because Williamsburg was the capital. It was a political town. It wasn't here for commercial reasons, so that's why the coopers weren't really drawn to it. You saw more coopers at Yorktown. It was a port town where you saw a lot of ships picking up goods, dropping goods off, or in Norfolk, or on the plantations out in the countryside. That's where you saw a lot of coopers in Virginia.
Now, how long, and you may not know, but how long do you think it will take you to be a master cooper?
Well, I mean, I definitely have to get through my apprenticeship first. That's usually on average between 6 to 7 years to become, I guess, what they would call a journeyman, a practicing tradesman. A master, I guess a master's, in the 18th century, it's kind of a loaded term, I guess, because when you become a master of a shop, it doesn't mean that you are a master. Your skills aren't masterful. In fact, you might not even practice the trade that you're running the shop of. A master simply pertains to the fact that you own the shop, you run the shop, you're the businessman, the businesswoman. I guess in the other term, as far as mastering the skill of coopering, my entire life, I think I'll always be trying to perfect those skills. And I think I impose on myself very strict, very high standards. So I don't know when that will ever happen, maybe. Probably not within the length of my apprenticeship.
Have you ever been asked a question that you couldn't answer?
It happens. And to be perfectly honest, I actually enjoy those questions. Most of the questions that we get are the standard questions that you hear every 5 minutes, every 3 minutes. What kind of wood is it? How to make the buckets watertight? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we get questions. One time I got asked the question, this was probably one of the best questions I got. What was your most favorite question you've ever been asked? And that caught me off guard. And I was like, wow, that's great. I'll have to think about that. But yeah, questions that are difficult to answer, I think, make you think. Mm-hmm. And if I don't know the answer per se, that makes me want to do the research and find the answer to make myself a better interpreter, a better historian. So I'm trying to think of one particular question that really kind of caught me off guard, but none coming to mind at the moment.
But kids or adults ask more difficult questions?
Kids do.
Kids do?
Yeah, kids do. Kids don't seem to be confined by social taboos and stigmas.
In other words, they ask you whatever they want.
They ask you whatever they want to ask, yeah. And And so, yeah, kids definitely ask the more difficult questions, I find.
Are the tools you're using 18th century tools?
They are not from the 18th century. They are period correct tools. They're made, they're modeled after tools from the 18th century. Mm-hmm. The tools are modeled after 18th century tools. The materials we use, like the types of woods, cedar, pine, oak, are all woods that Cooper's used in this region in Virginia. The techniques are all the same. The methods are all the same. Yeah.
So you're trying to actually, you're going back 300 years, not necessarily doing exactly the same thing, but replicating it with tools, wood, and just the way they did things.
Yeah, yeah. We're trying to make it as close as possible. I guess one of the questions that we get a lot is how long it takes to make a bucket or a barrel.
Good question.
And that is probably one of the more difficult questions to answer, because we could talk probably for an hour discussing that. Usually most people don't want to hear that long, drawn-out answer. They want to hear, 3 hours to make a barrel, or maybe 6 hours to make a barrel, an hour to make a bucket. Now, when I say those times, I mean it takes an hour to make a bucket for a cooper in an environment where they're working very quickly. They're piece workers. They get paid in the 18th century. They were piece workers. They get paid by the number of items they make in a day. So they're working very quickly, no interruptions, no visitors. It's a closed shop. And it would take a cooper making just those sizes of containers, just buckets, for example. And he's been making those buckets for months on end, an hour to make a bucket. For us in our shop today in Colonial Williamsburg, it could take us to make a bucket. It could take anywhere from 3 hours if we're on a slow day. There's no interruptions. Say in January, one of our slowest times, it could take 3 hours to make a bucket. In July or August, when we're at the peak of our tourist season, it could take us 3 days to make that same bucket because our job is to stop and talk and explain what we're doing. So, but that's the nature of our work.
That's Colonial Williamsburg, past and present this time. Check www.history.org often. We'll post more for you to download and hear.